This will be a tape recording of a talk given by Serenity Sam Meyer of Richmond, Indiana. This talk was given at the second annual Kingsburg Mini Conference held in Kingsburg, California on Saturday evening, October the 24th, 1987. At the time of this talk, Serenity Sam had been sober over 31 years in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. This tape was produced in the spirit of AA's 12th step to carry this message, and members of the fellowship should bear in mind AA's tradition number 11 regarding anonymity at the level of press, radio, TV, and films in their use of this tape.
At this time, I'd like to introduce our final speaker for our conference this year, Serenity Sam from Indiana.
I gotta get wired up here. I'm leery of these things. Two of my uncles went to the electric chair. Anyway, good evening. I'm Sam, an alcoholic. The world's oldest living dope fiend. I don't identify with people who specialize. I took it all, because it might work. I come from a family of alcoholics, and I promised myself when I was a child, I'll never grow up and be like those assholes. No way. Because they were always in some kind of trouble, and I didn't like that. Names in the paper all the time. Public intoxication. Drunk driving. Lots of fights. And I just didn't want to end up like that, but I was taught a lot of rather strange things when I was a kid. My earliest memories are of my Aunt Bessie telling me bedtime stories, and she only knew two of them. She was drunk all the time, and she'd say to my sisters and me, "You want to hear about the time your Uncle Louie was a bootlegger when I was a whore in Peoria?" I learned the facts of life very early. By the time I was old enough to get out amongst them, is the building on fire? I should talk faster? Oh. Things bad for my oral fixation. Well, I was here for this afternoon's meeting. God, something else. That guy used the F word 57 fucking times. I identified with that because my Aunt Bessie used to give me a quarter when I was a kid to say fuck in the grocery store and embarrass my mother. I got a dollar if I said it in church. And I didn't want to grow up and be like my relatives. By the time I was 5 years old, I'm saying those words, I'm chewing tobacco, I'm smoking big black cigars. It's a hell of a mess. My mother decided to straighten me out. She sent me for the cure. She sentenced me to 8 years in a Catholic school. Where I majored in guilt, with a minor in shame. My Aunt Bessie had always told me, if you don't want to do anything, you tell those nuns to shove it. Well, I did. It didn't work. They won. It took 2.5 years before I finally learned, yes, ma'am, no, ma'am, anything you want, ma'am. I had to stay every night after school. Took me that long. I thought I would win. I really thought, hell with ma'am, I'll do it. But they won. Then I went in the opposite direction. I became an altar boy. I sang in the choir. I got straight A's. I was held up as an example to the other little guilt-ridden urchins that went there. I did my time. Got out, and I went straight to a reform school. Because I was in the family business, which is stealing. I got into a lot of trouble, so that put me away. I got out of the reform school. I had gone through puberty in 20 minutes. And I was a horny little kid loose on the streets. And I got into a lot of trouble again. And I still hadn't had anything to drink, because I don't want to end up like my relatives. When I was 16 and I was married, I was a father when I was 16. I don't know what the hell's going on. I hadn't read that pamphlet, Pregnancy is Cause and Cure. I continued to stay in the family business. When I was 18 years old, I was arrested as an adult. Put in the big time jail, county jail. My Uncle Bill was already in there doing 90 days for drunk and disorderly. Next door in the women's jail was my Aunt Gussie doing 90 days for drunk and disorderly and trying to knife my Uncle Louie. They throw me in there with 9 felonies against me. I had to wait on a trial. My father came to see us on the first visiting day. He's drunk. They arrest him in the visiting room, throwing him with it. So there's always relatives every time I went. I got put away. I got a 1 to 10 year sentence out of that. I did my time and I got out. I was almost 21 years old. The sweet young thing that I was married to had sense enough to divorce me, marry a nice guy, and move to Pittsburgh and raise the kid. I started to drink and I loved it. And I realized what a fool I was for not starting earlier. First year of my drinking, I started using drugs. I liked amphetamines. They would keep me awake. When everybody else passed out, I could roll them. But one of the major things I liked about it was I bullshitted myself that they enhanced my intelligence. And what they did was speed up my mouth. So I had an amphetamine mouth and a Demerol brain. And that's a deadly combination loose on the streets. I got into a lot of trouble. By the time I was 23, 24 years old, there were people in Skid Row bars sitting on the bar stool next to me saying, "You ought to quit drinking." I don't know how you people drank, but that's the way I did. I'm not one of these two-beer, oh-dear drinkers. They wet their pants and ran screaming to Alcoholics Anonymous. which reminds me, I don't have a watch either. I had a watch when I came to AA, but...
I have nothing to worry about.
I had a watch when I got here to A&A, but the only reason I still had it was because it only had a minute hand on it. The kind of people I ran around with, nobody cared what time it was. They'd say, "What time is it?" I'd say, "A quarter after something." But it didn't matter. Because I drank a lot. I used a lot of drugs. I didn't care where they came from. They might work. I was a guinea pig. I would try anything. Now, I'm amazed that I was able to stand upright and breathe long enough to get to Alcoholics Anonymous. I was a hell of a mess. I believe that's why I got here as quick as I did. Some people don't make it, of course. And I was lucky enough. Those of you in this room were lucky. We know too many people that anything but go to them goddamn meetings. I've heard that out of people. I've heard it on their deathbed. My youngest brother used to say that. I'm not going over there with those old fools. I'm not an alcoholic, but he died from too much drinking and too many drugs, and I told my mother to put on his tombstone, "Here lies a non-alcoholic who died from too much drinking." I don't give a damn about labels and names and all that shit. I don't care if I wake up on Judgment Day and God's telling me I'm an Al-Anon. I would rather be in here by mistake than out there by mistake. And I got into a lot of trouble. Cops picked on me a lot. I couldn't go from one bar to the other if the bars were next door to each other. I got rousted every night. I thought my name was "Get in the Car, Punk." That's all I ever said. Then they'd hit me over the head. My solution to that was to drink closer to the jail. I wouldn't get hit so much on the way there. As soon as I was off parole, I had a long one. I had 4 years on paper. They wouldn't even let me leave the county, let alone the state. They were really after me. So I did what I was told. But as soon as I was able to leave town, I did, because I'd heard about a place where you could buy marijuana in the liquor stores. All you needed was money. And I thought, God damn, that's where I'm going. Everything will be there in one block where I don't have to get off these hassles. So I moved there, Newport, Kentucky. And I lived there with some of my heroes, mafia types. I loved mafia types. When I was a kid, they were my heroes. You could take George Washington and Abe Lincoln, and those... Washington snitched on himself. What are you too bright? But he was a politician. So. My hero was a guy named Frank Costello. Yeah. Because I watched Costello on television. They didn't get his name out of him for 5 days, let alone any information. He wouldn't give him his name. Finally, the judge says to him, "Mr. Costello, I hold you in contempt of this court." Costello stood up, took the money. He said that your bail is $65,000. Costello stood up, took the money out of his pocket, and said, "Where do I pay?" Now that's my hero. $65,000 in his pocket. So anyway, I moved to Newport, Kentucky, where there was a bunch of mafia types. They were really just Italians. And I didn't know it. If they carried a gun, I thought, God damn, that's all right. I was a witness to a killing. There's one way to be an alive witness, and that's get the hell out of there. When in doubt, cut out. And when in doubt, drink. And so that's what I did. I got out of there. And I went home to Mama, because I have a 500-mile-long umbilical cord. And I just reeled that sucker in. I followed it. But my mother had been to Al-Anon. Yep. She had those little beady eyes and that smile. When I got there, she put me up against the wall and released me. I can still feel the pain from there. She said, "You can hang around here for a week or 10 days and you get your ass out of here. Because you're drunk now and you're going to stay drunk and you're not going to do anything about it, and I know it, and I ain't going to put up with it." And she had never talked like that before. While I was there, my youngest brother came running from the cops. And one morning, he and I were puking together. And he said to me, "If our luck holds out, we'll be dead by noon." Now that's how bad it had gotten, and I had 2 more years of drinking. So you see, I hit bottom, but I didn't pay any attention to it. Well, I got the hell out of there, and I moved to Venice, California. And I lived there for the next 32 years of my life. And I got off the bus, and I went over across the street to a bar, because I'd heard Venice was the worst place in town, in L.A. County. And I said to a guy, where is the apartment building around here where there's lots of action going on, and it's the worst place? Just start at the bottom. I'm a lower companion, if you haven't figured that out by now. I just started at the bottom and laid there. I never went into place. He told me about an apartment building up the street, and he said, I got to warn you. He said, they call that place the House of Weird. I said, what? The House of what? Anyway, I went to the damn place and rented a room, and I lived next door to a girl that I fell in love with, a manic depressive like myself. She always carried 3 suicide notes and a razor blade for emergencies. She came home every night from work. She brushed her teeth, turned on the gas, and went to bed. But the major reason I liked her, because she had the ability, the same as I did, to put the blame and the responsibility on everybody else. They did it. Really fast with it, see. She had a boyfriend. There was only one way to get rid of him, and that's to shoot him. So she was going to shoot the poor bastard. But he'd taken the bullets out of the gun. But as she's pulling the trigger, aiming this gun at this dude, she's saying to him, you son of a bitch, it's your fault. You made a killer out of a nice girl like me. Yeah. That's right, it's his fault. And that's the way my life had been lived. Somebody else always had to take the responsibility for me. I would lie out of anything that I could. Even if they had pictures, I denied it. I called my father at Christmas time, which was the only time he would accept a collect call from me. And my father suggested that I go to Alcoholics Anonymous. And for some reason or other, I paid attention to him. First, I balked, of course. We're all balkers, I believe, that come here. And I said to him, why should I go over there? What for? He said, well, let's back up a little bit here. He said, what you been doing the last couple of years but drinking yourself to death? And I know you're taking drugs. He said, what did you get for Christmas? I said, well, I got 2 gallons of wine and a 500-pound Benzedrine tablet. Because I'd fantasized about that big pill for years. I wanted that son of a bitch. Take it and rock it to the moon. For some reason or other, I paid attention to the man. We talked on for a little bit, and I decided to do it. Now, he, of course, had no way of knowing whether I would do it or not, but I was the one that would know, of course. And I quit. It took me 2 days. First time since I'd started using that I ever quit anything. 2 whole days, and I finally got on the bus to go into Los Angeles to find A&A. And it took me all day to get it done. I left Venice at 10 o'clock in the morning, and at 10 minutes to 10 that night, I finally found the meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. When I walked in, I didn't like what I heard there at all. There was a woman sharing, and she said that she'd wet her pants twice since she came to AA. And all I could think of was, well, wait till they find out what I've done. I ain't going to tell them. So I told them I had a slight problem with the bottle. Eased my way into it. I wasn't going to tell them anything else. They didn't mention any kind of pills, and they didn't mention marijuana, and so I didn't mention it. I stayed sober and clean for 10 days. At the end of 10 days, I smoked a joint. Naturally, I got thirsty, so I drank. Then I got drowsy, so I took some pills. Right? Natural progression. I stayed loaded for a week. But I'd heard about lower companions, and I knew that someplace in Los Angeles had to be a lower companion meeting. I quit one more time. I went back into a place where I'd been to a meeting, and I said, look, this isn't working here for me. Where is a lower companion group? The guy said, come on, I got just the group for you. He took me to the corner of Pico and Alvarado.
Well, there was a group called the End of the Line, and that sucker was the end of the line. When I walked in there, they just were starting the meeting, and the chairman was pounding the gavel down, and he said, "We don't read here." He says, "There's no traditions. It's every man for himself."
I liked that, because I didn't like that reading that was going on in some of those other meetings, because they kept talking about demands rigorous honesty. I didn't want to hear that. They talked about God, and they read these things, and I thought, no way. So here was a group that didn't read. They asked for announcements at the beginning of the meeting, and the dude stood up and said that he was a manic depressive, he was sinking into a depression, he was going to kill himself, and he wouldn't be at the meeting next week. He wanted to say goodbye to all of his friends. My kind of people. I'd found a friend, but he was leaving. I saw a guy there that I used to drink with, and so I asked him to be my sponsor. And George had a rather liberal program. George drank beer. "Beer is a beverage," he said to me. Come on in, you haven't missed a thing. We're getting to the spiritual part here. I don't mind seeing it if the rest of you do. Oh. Yeah, adults. Yeah, it's the same sound, isn't it? As a newcomer, yeah. Looks better than most of them. Listen, I still remember what a woman said to me when I came in. She said, "Don't take the 20 questions. You look like them." Anyway, I found in this group, and this wonderful sponsor of mine who was drinking beer and wandered off to get a bunch more drunk driving charges, and he ended up being shot through the heart by a bus driver in Santa Monica. And bus drivers usually kick you off the bus or call the cops. This one shot George through the heart. So much for beer as a beverage. I found another sponsor, and I picked him because he had the two or three requirements for sponsorship. He wasn't very bright, and he had a lot of money. I thought, I'm going to manipulate this old fool. But what I didn't know was he had bullshit filters in his ears. Ah. And so he could translate. And he would read to me out of that book. I didn't like it. Didn't like it at all. But he had something that I wanted besides that money. I heard him say, the first time I met him, he said, "I'm sober today and I'm not unhappy about it." And that was my problem. I hated sobriety, dryness as such. I didn't believe that there could ever be any happiness in this. And he showed me that there could be. And so, of course, he saved my life in doing that. And I'm glad that he had the bullshit fillers in his ears, because I sure was ready with that. I could have fertilized a 40-acre field in 10 minutes the way I was going at it. And so he showed me how to work the steps. He showed me what he had done. He was never a dictator. And after I'd been sober for a little while, some of my so-called intellectualism returned, and I was on my way to being a spiritual giant and an AA fanatic. I was a hell of a mess. He and a guy that used to manage a club where I belonged to, they used to send me out on fake 12-step calls to get rid of me. That's how bad it was. And being an AA fanatic, I brought people back. Some of those poor dudes sobered up and they're still in AA and don't know they're here by mistake. A lot of years of happiness, you know, and all this sort of thing. You're not supposed to be here. I argued with him, but the bullshit shoulders, he could cut everything down to one line and nail me to the wall with it. I didn't like the cliches after a while. That book is badly written. All intellectuals know that. That's what I laid that on him one day. I said, just what the hell does live and let live mean? He said, it means mind your own goddamn business. Oh, I can understand that. I said, what about think, think, think? He said, in your case, it's with what, what. So forget it. And I would get into an argument with him, which usually ended up with me saying, you old wet-brained bastard, just shut up and let me alone. He would say to me, did you hear that noise? I'd say, what noise? He'd say, I heard your mind close. I once heard it said about him that he could tell you to go to hell in such a nice way you were looking forward to the trip. And that's pretty accurate for him. He was a wonderful man. He saved my life in so many ways. He had more tolerance and patience than I've ever had. And certainly a lot of love. There's a lot of people in Los Angeles that still remember him fondly, that he was a man to go to. And what a hell of a goal or a role model for somebody to pick and aim in that general direction. Because I had to get away from being that AA fanatic. I went to Akron, Ohio to the AA shrines. I came back with all kinds of autograph pictures. I wasn't honest yet. I'd put the autographs on there. I got off the plane and I'm showing all these things to my sponsor and he says, yeah, I know, anything but work the steps. I didn't want to hear that. Sometime after that, I fell into a hell of a good job. I began to make a lot of money. So with my being a borderline spiritual giant at that time, I also became an arrogant egomaniac. And I began to flaunt my money. And of course, the bullshit filters were still functioning in his ears. And he was ready for me. I bought myself a Cadillac convertible in Beverly Hills. I pulled it up in front of the Venice AA meeting, where you had to go over it, under it, or through it to get into the meeting. Know whose car that was. I walked into the meeting, and I had already told several people, I'm going to get this car. And a newcomer standing there talking to my sponsor. Says, what kind of a car? I walked into the meeting, and I had already told several people, I'm going to get this car. And newcomer standing there talking to my sponsor. Says, what kind of a car did Sam get? My sponsor says, he got a green one. I said, it's a Cadillac convertible, you old fool. He says, come here, punk. I said, there's two kinds of cars. Those that run and those that don't run. Have you got that? So there went the Cadillac convertible down the tubes, of course. I didn't feel comfortable driving that car after that. I've had so many wonderful times in A&A. I've had a lot of fun in meetings, outside of meetings with people that I've met. I worked those steps the first time because I was scared not to. But I worked them again because I wanted to, because I wished to maintain my sobriety. And in the past few years, I keep things as simple as I possibly can because I spent a lot of years complicating things, being a borderline spiritual giant for a long time there. I used to stand around meetings and pose as a human being. I stood near the coffee pot and looked good. By this time I didn't work with newcomers too much anymore. You came to me. That kind of shit. That'll get you. You got me, anyway. I had continued success in work, and of course that helped to maintain the arrogance. And I've had to get honest in a lot of areas. I've had a lot of luck in my life, as far as the work was concerned. Of course, I had talent or I couldn't have kept it. But goddammit, I fell into a lot of those jobs, but I never admitted that. I didn't tell people that. I just stood there and let other people make the publicity for me. And I co-signed the lie, in other words, by not opening my mouth and telling the truth about it. Because I just fell into some jobs. I write for a living, and the creator of Hogan's Heroes, Bernie Fine, called me to come in for a job interview. I thought it was a 12-step call. I said, "Have you been drinking?" It's a good opening line. Tried to get him to take the 20 questions on the phone. And you're going to get your ass to a meeting tonight, too. Laid that on. He's laughing his ass off. He don't know what the hell's going on. He thinks I'm funny. I finally got it straightened out. I went in for the interview 2 days later and got the job. We worked together for 2 years. But I didn't tell people that. Oh, no, no, no. I told them where I worked, but not how the job came about. And the fact that I had tripped over it, more or less. I worked on another show, and the director is telling me, "You're very creative," and I'm bowing and nodding. Of course, Jesus Christ, I'm a hell of a mess. What I didn't tell him was all I had put down on paper for that show was a pill trip that I had taken 20 years before that. And they called it a big fantasy, and here we're going to film it and all that shit. Never opened my mouth. Got a big award for it. I didn't tell anybody where it really came from. I had a lot of other incidences like that, half-truths. I used to talk in group therapy and in meetings about being molested when I was a child. And the truth of that is, it was the paper boy, and he copped a feel, and I liked it. But I didn't tell people that. You see, I was molested when I was a child. I was out there on the street corner the very next Saturday looking for him. Besides, he'd give me 50 cents. I was a whore and didn't know it. I like some of the little Freudian slips I heard here in chapter 5 tonight in our reading. I like that. I've been to some great meetings where that's happened, and I seem to pay more attention when that happens, too. I was at a Thorazine group one evening at one of those treatment centers, and they asked a dude to read chapter 5, and he shuffled up here. It took him 25 minutes to read the damn thing. The meeting was half over, and he's still reading. But he got to the part where it says, "We are not saints." And he read it, "We are now saints." And he stopped and he looked around and he said, "Isn't that wonderful?" Oh, if I'd stayed home, I'd miss that. You can stay home and watch Slip of Vision. Some do. I haven't reached that terminal stage of sobriety. Yeah, I like television. I like a lot of things. I got a VCR, push the button, go to a meeting. Simple as that. Meetings are too important to me. They've saved my life so many times when I felt like, well, screw AA and everybody in sight. I'm going to burn a big book in the parking lot. And those thoughts run through my head. I don't know about you, but they do with me. Something happens in the meeting a lot of times. I didn't want to admit those feelings for a long time. I didn't want anybody to think that there was something wrong with my program, something wrong with me. I had this image, you see. And I was beginning to fall apart. I was trying to write comedy for a living, but I had the 3 suicide notes and the razor blade left over from the old days in my pocket. And I began to fall apart. Sometimes I could go to meetings and really feel good, but on the way home it didn't last. And so I left the meeting one evening, and I was determined to kill myself, and I left the car running in the garage. I went in the house and did the dishes, left the three suicide notes on the sink, and went back out and laid down in the back seat of the car, found out that I had to go to the can. I got up, I went back in the house. I'm not going to be found with wet pants. The phone rang, and I'm nosy on my deathbed. I answered it. It was a newcomer in a depression. This idiot's interrupting my suicide attempt. What a stupid depression. But being sober 17 years at the time, I had to tell him how good I felt. How wonderful things are. You shouldn't do that. In the middle of telling him that, I had to say, just a moment, I have to go out and turn off the motor in the car. Why don't hide or deny those things anymore? I don't care whether they look good, bad, or otherwise. That's the way it is. I used to think, well, I'll leave people with no hope. So I share my experience, strength, and scar tissue with you. Get your own hope. But I've since found out there's a bunch of people around that have been posing the same as I did. And it's a killer. So whatever's happening to you, lean into the pain. Get rid of it as quickly as you possibly can. Pick up and go on. Because I'm certain that we're going to wake up on Judgment Day and God's going to say, this is a cosmic joke. And I hope there is a Judgment Day. I want to see what you guys get. I'm nosy. I got to know what's going on.
Have some fun while you're here. Because this might be a cosmic joke. Let's enjoy ourselves. I kind of think we're God's late, late show anyway. I think he created this world and split. Look around you, read the headlines. Watch the evening news. And it ain't all Al-Anon's doing that out there either. There's a few hockeys. I intend to live as comfortably as I possibly can. Well, I'm enduring this sentence I have on this planet. I spent a lot of time thinking, well, this is the hell of some other planet. I wonder what I did over there to get sentenced to this mess. I read that in a book one time and identified with it. I don't even care anymore. Because I don't think anybody with a finite mind is going to figure all this out. Here we are with our little chintzy minds trying to figure everything out. What for? It's a waste of time. Oh, I like to think. I like to fantasize. I like to dream. Above all, I like to live and experience and feel and do things. And that's only possible because I'm a member of Alcoholics Anonymous, not for any other reason. I've been a lot of other places. I've been to therapy, group therapy, nude therapy, up yours therapy, primal screams, anal screams. Anything that'll work. Whatever.
I don't do that so much anymore. I got involved with a thing up here at Esalen a few years ago, and I paid $250. I go up there for this weekend, and the food was bad. And anyway, at the end of this thing, the big-time guru stands up, and he said, well, my philosophy of living boils down to one sentence. Living in the here and now, and all the rest is bullshit. And I thought, well, that's all right, but $250, I mean, for a bumper sticker. But what really griped me was I had heard that at the Venice AA meeting the week before. And it cost me a dollar. I already knew that. So I don't go to those things so much. I still read a lot. I like to read books. But not to trip out the way I used to. Do I know how to fantasize? Does any out there go? Of course we do. That's all we know how to do. We don't know how to live. But you can learn that once you come here. You can live the way you want to. You can be what you want to. And if you're schizophrenic, bring all yourselves in here. That's what I did. I told my sponsor I was going to pose for a group picture by myself. He said, I hate to tell you this, but all of yourselves is going to have to work the steps. So I don't like that, so I got integrated. I don't know if you guys have had fun today, but I have. I'm kind of hokey. I laugh at myself. I laugh at my own jokes. If I write things, I think, God damn, that's funnier than him. I was born in left field, and I was born like this, and I know that's what first came out of the womb. I just followed it. I'm a professional balker, the rest of you are. I didn't want to come out of the womb. If I'd had something to read in the light, I wouldn't have come out. My Aunt Bessie told me you only came out because you'd written on all the walls. Now, we are some of the luckiest people in the world, those of us that are here tonight in this room, or in any meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. So use this. Nurture it. Maintain it. Yeah, there's going to be rough times. I'm not one of these tra-la-la sobriety types that I see, no matter what you ask him. Oh, I know a little old broad down in I better not break her anonymity. Anyway, L.A. County, that's close enough. You ask her how she is. Oh, everything's marvelous. Just marvelous. I'm in the middle of a miracle. Then she'll say, you know, when I die, I'm going to the big meeting in the sky. She's over longer than I am, and she used to tell me that when I was new, and I'd think, I don't care about these goddamn meetings. I'm not going over there. It's bad enough here that I have to go. I'm going to the big liquor store in the sky and then right to the big drunk tank with my friends. So today when somebody asks me how I am, I tell them. But I don't dwell on either thing, whether I'm good, bad, or otherwise. If I'm totally fucked, I tell you that. But I only do that three times. Then after that, I say, I'm so-so. Because I find myself dwelling on that pain and that depression and nurturing it and maintaining it. And that'll kill you. Because it all stems from fear and resentment almost every damn time. And our book says resentment is the number one offender. And I didn't know that until I finally read that book. And I even have a tendency to forget it. So I have to read that book again. It's like going to meetings. I think I'm a borderline spiritual giant. I thought that one night I could knock an Al-Anon down at 20 feet with my vibes. And I stopped in a grocery store on the way home, and I'm standing in this line, checkout line, and I think, why can't they feel my vibes? I'm sending all this love and spirituality out, and then the line moves slower and slower and slower. Then I reverted to what I'm really like. If these son of a bitches knew there was an alcoholic and a potential killer in this line, they'd get the fuck out of my way. So I needed a meeting the next night, at noon or whatever. Yeah. All of us have to keep coming back. It's not only for the newcomers, it's for old fools like me, too. Christ, I've been sober more than 30 years, and not too long ago, I ride motorcycles. And, how's that? I look so bad on some days. I went to a meeting not too long ago and somebody tried to 12-step me. So I let him. He needed the exercise. Not that many newcomers around. Still enjoying myself. I'm still living. I'm doing a lot of things that I've always wanted to do. I don't sit back with binoculars and watch other people do what I want to do. I get out and do it. I'm a sinner. I'm a firm believer in sinning. Firm believer in relationships. If you're falling out of one, get into another one. Don't waste any time. Get into it. I'd rather see two people together than two people alone sitting in a meeting or tripping out. I always tripped out. I needed relationships so I could pay attention better at meetings. Do I have to translate that for you? Well, if you're new, and as soon as you're able to get it up, get it on. Is that plain? You can laugh all you want to, but don't forget to work them steps. I'm simply glad to be alive and to be able to stand upright and breathe tonight. It's only possible because I'm a member of AA. I surrender each and every day to this power, whatever the hell it is, and I don't understand it. I just surrender to whatever it is. And to create the universe, I think that's good enough. Why not go to the top? Don't need anybody in between me and whatever this power is. I said, yeah, come on, let's whatever we got to do here, let's do it. And then I don't pray very much because my prayers for years consisted of pre-bargaining. So now I just say, help. Any kind of a higher power knows what I need. Otherwise, I got a hold of the lower power if I have to explain things. I don't want to talk too long. And, well, how long does it take to say, don't drink and go to meetings? Which is the message. The rest of it is my tired story and some of the things that have happened to me along the way. And I've had one hell of a good life, and I've had one hell of a bad life. And I've got complaints. And other times I don't have complaints. I live, I experience, I feel, I do it all. Because I don't want to, you know, when I die, I want to be 6 months behind what I'm really aiming out there to do. I want to have all these things to do. See, and I do them. I travel a lot. I get around different places. And God, I love to do that. And to meet new people and always let new people into my life. I'm not a closed corporation. I was at one time and I paid a hell of a price for that. Not anymore. Anybody who wants in, come on in. The same way I learned that, of course, right here in A&A. At the first lower companion meeting I went to, about 10 minutes into the meeting, through the side door came three dykes. Two were sober and one was drunk. And the sober ones wandered off and they left the drinking one there, and she sobered up. And she's sober today. And I'm sober, I'll be 31 years sober in January. And Aggie sobered up that same day. And she called herself Aggie the Dyke. She still does. She's got a flat top haircut, rides a Harley Davidson, got a big tattoo on here that I won't tell you what it says. And, but she says today that she is sober because she was made welcome at that group. And I believe that that should say it for Alcoholics Anonymous, every place. Yeah, we care. Oh, damn well, we better. We had to translate that at the old Venice meeting. We had a sign up that says, we give a fuck. Well, some people didn't know what we meant. I'm still friends with Aggie today. I'm still friends with a lot of other people, and I like the continuity of that. And that's only possible because I have come here and have continued to stay an active member of Alcoholics Anonymous so that I, in turn, can be an active member of the human race. I can tell you tonight that my name is Sam, and I'm for real, but only because I'm a member of Alcoholics Anonymous and not for any other reason. That's it. This will